The following is a Laura Flanders Show minicast.
Search for school cheating stories today and you'll find a slew of articles and news reports on parents and an elite college prep coach charged in an admissions scandal involving some well-known names, including actress Felicity Huffman. But skip back to 2015, and the eyes of the education world were on Georgia, where the state's longest-running criminal case involving teachers and administrators accused of changing student test results to improve test scores was roiling. Many of those charged are now serving jail time, but one is the author of a new book. Shani Robinson, a former first-grade teacher, was sentenced to 1 year in prison, 4 years of probation, and a $1,000 fine, along with 1,000 hours of community service. Like 34 of the 35 convicted, she's African-American. With reporter Anna Simonton, Robinson is the author of None of the Above, the untold story of the Atlanta public schools cheating scandal, corporate greed, and the criminalization of educators. Simonton is one of a group of Southern-based journalists and organizers who just launched Press On, a new media collective based in the South, with the goal of growing the media ecosystem of that region. She's also one of the editors of Scalawag. Anna, Shani, welcome to the program. Glad to have you with us for this conversation about education. I mean, I got to go to you, Shani, first. As you're watching this elite college admission scandal play out, how are you reacting?
Right. You know, as soon as the scandal hit the news, I knew immediately that people were going to start comparing the two. But, you know, I look at them like apples to oranges, the two situations. But I'm happy that the case is getting a lot of attention. I feel that people should be outraged. You know, we're told to believe in the American myth that anyone can get ahead if they work hard. But that particular case demonstrates that, you know, it's not a student's bootstraps, but their parents' coattails that afford them the opportunity to succeed. So, yeah, I think we should all be outraged by this and work at the local level to support teachers and real transparent community control of our public schools.
Now, the story of the Atlanta Public Schools or APS system may be a little foggy in some people's minds, which is why it's so great that you two have written this book. But just to fill us in or remind us, these were some extraordinary convictions, a very wide-ranging case. Take us back a little bit to 2015, Shani, and how this played out just briefly. You were a first grade teacher, right?
Right. I was convicted April 1st of 2015. But to take the story back to its beginnings, in December of 2008, there was a report in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that was released about suspicious score jumps on the CRCT. It was in five school districts across the state.
Now, this is the standardized test, right, for telling how schools are doing and teachers and students are performing.
Correct. It stands for Criterion Reference Competency Test. 2009, on the last day of testing that year, I was called into a computer lab to erase doodles and stray marks on my students' test booklets. It was a procedure that was written in the testing manual, so I didn't suspect anything. I would later learn that a former coworker who was in the computer lab with me that day in question falsely accused me of changing my students' answers. But anyway, my husband called me and told me that I had been indicted in this massive cheating scandal. And I was thinking, what? You know, oh my God, are you serious? He said, yes, I saw your name scrolling across the bottom of the news. He said they charged you with racketeering. I didn't even really know what racketeering was. I knew that it was a serious crime dealing with money. And so I'm thinking, but wait, I never even received any money. Because the racketeering charge was based on people receiving bonus money. And the way to receive bonus money was for your school to meet its district targets, which were like the benchmarks that were imposed by the Atlanta Public School Board and administration.
Anna, you're watching this story play out. GBI is the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, I'm guessing. What do you think? I mean, you took these tests, right?
The sort of consensus among me and my classmates was that this was something that detracted from the things that we actually appreciated about our education. To see teachers charged with crimes that were created to bring down the American mafia and other organized crime rings, and ridiculous given the way that these tests don't actually serve to further students' education. And then to see that they were all people of color, 34 out of 35 were Black, just furthered the outrage, I think, that folks felt to see these teachers indicted.
So to go back again to where we left off the story, Shani, you're being charged under a conspiracy to racketeer, a racketeering case that has to do with scores achieving for the schools, special aid from the state. I mean, I think we can see where this is going. In your book, you tie it to a whole lot of interests that are not usually connected to this. Developers, corporations. Talk about some of the context in which this was playing out back in 2012 through 15.
The charges were basically saying that two people who may not have known each other but had similar intentions and acts were in a conspiracy. And so prosecutors had to prove that Atlanta Public Schools was a criminal enterprise. Now, the hypocrisy here is that the same time that the governor, Sonny Perdue, sent in his special investigators to the schools to find out if cheating had occurred, who was involved, he turned around and used those same test scores in an application to get a $400 million Race to the Top grant. And so later, there were actually education officials that testified during the trial to try to justify why they felt they were able to use those scores. And basically, what it boils down to is that they said that they took those scores out, but that the state average didn't change. It's really hard to believe that after taking out inflated scores from 20% of the schools across the state of Georgia, that the numbers didn't change at all. But that was their testimony.
Now, this is playing out, as you point out in your book, in the context of some changes in the real estate industry and even real estate tycoon access to that scoring. Why is that part of this story?
That's something that we talk about because of the way that schools in Atlanta and other cities too have been used as sort of a linchpin in the gentrification of our cities. And the way that that has worked in Atlanta goes back to actually one of the first charter schools that was opened in the year 2000, which was Drew Charter School. And it was created by a nonprofit started by Tom Cousins, who's a very powerful developer in Atlanta, and who teamed up with the local housing authority to turn a public housing complex into a mixed income complex. And this was during the 1990s. This was one of the first experiments with what eventually became the Hope 6 program that has led to the widespread dismantling of public housing nationwide. And what Tom Cousins said about the local elementary school was that we need that to be part of this deal. We need to not only privatize the public housing, but also the public school and turn it into a charter, because that will attract middle-class families. That will make the, he said, market-rate units of this new housing development desirable. We see real estate developers touting school test scores as a way to sort of sell neighborhoods. We also see this happening with something called tax allocation districts in Atlanta, which is kind of a wonky term, but it's basically geographic areas where the property taxes that are supposed to go to the city, the county, and the school system are instead put into a slush fund for private development to build things like the Beltline, which is our sort of rails to trails project, and it's one of the big drivers of gentrification. The hype around it is used to attract people to the area, and it's caused property values to spike in historically Black neighborhoods and push out the very children that those funds were intended to educate. So the cheating scandal was sort of, a narrative was developed around it that sort of furthered those deals, because the cheating scandal was construed to say, look at how terrible public education has become, these schools are failing, and it enabled people to use these education, misuse these education dollars and justify it.
Mm, I don't know. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of cheating here, but it's really doesn't sound like it's Shani and the teachers cheating.
Right.
One of the great things about your book, and the reason this is so valuable, what you've written, the two of you, is that you're going way beyond what we normally see in the education stories. Individuals, teachers, parents in the college case, coaches, to really put in this in the context of a lot of kind of corporate and systemic cheating. Can you elaborate a little bit, Anna?
Yeah. So one thing that we point out is that cheating became widespread after No Child Left Behind, which was the 2001 federal legislation that mandated that test scores have to increase every year. And if they don't, schools can face sanctions, including the closure or takeover and conversion into charter schools. And so by 2015, there were 40 states and the District of Columbia where widespread cheating had been documented. And in D.C., there were about 103 schools that were flagged for suspicious test scores. So we really see this as a systemic problem. And that critique has been shared to some extent around the APS cheating scandal. There were definitely people that said, you know, these teachers are being scapegoated, and it's actually the systemic issue that we need to look at. And that's true. And because of the way that the investigation and trial were carried out, what a lot of people don't know about the APS cheating trial is that the people who stood trial didn't have anything to do with cheating. It was multiple levels of injustice in this case, including the way that people like Shani, who were totally innocent, were sort of caught up in this dragnet.
Tell us, Shani, how you did end up getting convicted and why a felony?
Yeah, the woman who falsely accused me actually later testified during the trial, and one of the defense attorneys asked her, "Why did you cheat?" And she told him that she cheated to meet the district targets. But here's the thing. She was a second grade teacher. She didn't even have any district targets. And not only that, first and second grade test scores did not count. There were no district targets, and they didn't count toward adequate yearly progress, which was, you know, sort of the national standards under No Child Left Behind. It makes us wonder, why did she say that? It seemed as if the trial was really hinged upon making everyone believe that cheating occurred only because of the district targets. And they, you know, kind of separated the fact that here are some national targets that have actually caused the same thing in other cities. And so they wanted to make Atlanta Public Schools, you know, seem like an isolated event.
They made you sign a document, isn't that right?
When I actually met with the GBI agents, they pulled out a pre-written voluntary statement form that was basically saying, you know, that I didn't have any knowledge of cheating and that I didn't cheat. And then they asked me to sign this form, and I didn't know it at the time, but they had actually gone into the schools that day and interrogated teachers, and there were no attorneys present, and many teachers signed that form. And so later, some teachers would be charged with false statements and writings, which is a felony. And that was one of the charges that was used to undermine the RICO charge, because you can't just charge someone with racketeering. There's what we call predicate acts or predicate charges, whether it's false statements and writings or false swearing, theft by taking. You know, there has to be a reason why they charge you with racketeering.
Anna, to you. Why is this story so important that you would team up with Shani to tell this account that goes way beyond the individual experience to this sort of macro picture? Why the Atlanta story now? What's its importance, and what's its importance outside of Atlanta?
I think it's critical at this moment for people to understand this story in all of its complexity and to take action to support the Atlanta educators, because their victory, their freedom, would mean so much to the struggle for public education in this country and the struggle to reclaim our cities from corporate takeover, our cities, our schools, and our neighborhoods. The conditions that are underlying this case are the same conditions that so many teachers right now are standing up and going on strike about, taking to the streets and their Capitol buildings to say, enough is enough. We should be able to afford to live in the cities where we teach. We should be able to teach classes that are a reasonable size. We should be paid adequately. All of these things are at issue because of the what we call the corporate education reform movement, which has increasingly sought to profit off of public education through various means, including charters, vouchers, and other policies that enable corporations to have more control over the education market, which has become this multi-billion dollar market. And the issues go, we in the book go into things like urban renewal and the drug wars and mass incarceration to really look at how some of the same players who are involved in criminalizing the educators of Atlanta are the same folks who have over decades worked to dismantle what were once thriving Black communities. And so we're really asking the question, who has really been cheating these children? And how can this story shed light on the systemic ways that so many children in communities of color are being deprived of opportunity before they even set foot in the classroom? Teachers, though, are being sort of blamed for everything that students are bringing in with them that they really need support for. Generational poverty and trauma stemming from all of these things that they're up against. So this story, I think, touches on educators and communities nationwide, and we need to see these teachers free because it will set a precedent. There's no telling how many more cases like this we might see if we don't ensure that this outcome is in favor of educators.
That's Anna Simonton. She's the co-author with Shani Robinson of The Untold Story of the Atlanta Public Schools Cheating Scandal, Corporate Greed, and the Criminalization of Educators. And I want to thank you both, Shani Robinson, Anna Simonton. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
You were just listening to a Laura Flanders minicast exclusive to our podcast listeners. To listen to this interview in its entirety, go to Patreon, that's patreon.com/The LF Show. Become a member and support The Laura Flanders Show for as little as $2 a month.